gonna get there. Maybe I'll be happy if I leave here. Maybe I'll be happy if I love you. Maybe I'll be happy when I'm finally done. Maybe I'll be happy in D.C. Maybe I'll be happy in New Orleans. Maybe I'll be happy in a castle with Maxine. Maybe I'll be happy if I shoot my fan. Freedom Fiends. This is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. I am Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, and I am joined by, go ahead and introduce yourself, Ben first, please.
I am Ben Stone, Bad Quaker from BadQuaker.com, also referred to as the Bearded Possum.
Yep, and Gretchen.
Hello, this is Gretchen Clark, the Black Swamp Squirrel, coming at you from a small patch of woods in the middle of farm fields.
I like it. So we're going to start with a couple things here before we get into the truth about Pearl Harbor Day. And I know there's a lot of people who call their stuff the truth about, but ours really is. and we have citations. You can look them up on the website later. So, Gretchen, I would like Gretchen to read this part of this funding thing from a friend of ours. Nicole's mother was totally messed with by the cops for no good reason. Looks like some DA trying to make a name for himself, trying to add an arrest to his, who knows? I don't even know, but it ain't right. She didn't do nothing wrong. She's trying to not hit a deer. So this is from, you can go to gofundme.com/pleasehelpdonna. That's gofundme.com/pleasehelpdonna. So you want to go ahead and read this, please, Gretchen?
Sure. This is in Nicole's words then. Yep. My stepmother, Donna Merritt, was in a terrible accident on November 7th in which she swerved to avoid a deer and ended up going down a hill and into a creek. She had to be mercy flighted to the hospital, but before she got in the helicopter, the police wanted her to sign a consent form so they could draw blood and check for alcohol. She had not drank in 3 years and just wanted to get the help she needed, so she just went along with it. The tox screen came back completely clean, but since the DA, Richard Healy of Wayne County, presumed that this accident was alcohol-related, and because a paramedic said he thought he smelled alcohol, though most likely it was the Italian dressing on the food she was picking up for dinner, he was going to have her processed as such. November 26th, she was coerced into finding a ride to the Mayston police station, so they could process her. If she didn't willingly go there, they threatened to send someone to the house to get her and add yet another false charge of resisting arrest. Her court date is December 30th, and she needs a lawyer as soon as possible. She spoke with an attorney with a very good reputation for what she's dealing with, and his fee is $2,500, which she absolutely does not have. Donna is disabled, as is my father, and she is doing the best she can to continue to care for him despite the injuries she received in this accident. They lost their only vehicle in this accident, and the insurance company won't cover anything at all because they didn't see any evidence of a deer, which, oh my God. Yeah. Like you mentioned before, yeah, they usually get out of Dodge. They're usually gone if they're alive.
I think deers usually pull out spray paint and tag things, don't they? Those ones in New York.
This says I was here.
Yeah.
After going down a hill, sitting in the water for a couple hours, being winched back up the hill, this is the vehicle, not the deer, and then sitting for 5 days at a shop. She also needs to have surgery to reconstruct her nose after it was broken and split open. She is going through so much right now, and this hassle and humiliation is the last thing she needs. I am trying to raise money on this site because Donna and my dad don't have a computer and know practically nothing about the internet, so they have no idea that options like this are available. I just don't want to see her get a public defender and risk having things turn out bad.
Yeah.
She should not be charged with a single thing and should not pay a dime, not even the court fee.
Absolutely.
I've seen enough stuff. What's that?
Absolutely. And we're going to cut this off here. It tells more of the details, but you can go to gofundme.com/pleasehelpdonna. This is what happens with police when people who vote for politicians on the left and the right, which is all of everybody, because nobody else gets a chance. When those people say, think of the children. We need to have better, you know, like when they say we need more laws, what it ends up is with a senior citizen who's disabled, who takes care of her more disabled husband, getting totally messed over by the courts when she wasn't even drinking. That's what it leads to. Wouldn't you say, Ben?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have to justify their existence. They have to justify all the money that they spend in doing all this. And so they will go after people, even if they think they're going to lose. They'll still go after them because, you know, they need that publicity to get reelected, to get more funding, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's why zero tolerance just creeps further and further into like negative number tolerance, to where, like, you know, if they smell a vinaigrette salad, they're going to prosecute you for drunk driving and not let you fly, get medevaced to the hospital until you sign a consent form. Man, that's ridiculous. So,
and we both know her too. We've both met her. Yeah. This is a genuine person that we're comfortable with and familiar with. And
thank you for adding that. Cause, yeah, it might just sound like we found this thing on the internet and this person has a sob story. No, we know her. We hung out with her every day for 5 days at Porkfest. We've been talking to her a lot since. We're friends with Nicole, and I don't know her mother, Donna, but I believe Nicole, and I want people to help her if you can. She's a good lady.
Yeah, I met her also. I can confirm she is a real person.
So Ben's going to talk about some real people who have been catapulted into false people in history throughout the hagiography, the celebration of the saints of the state, and tell you why what you learn in school and what they trumpet on the news and what they do in the Hollywood movies ain't true. And he's going to back it up. And we're going to start with a disclaimer. What's your disclaimer, Ben?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, lied to justify getting the U.S. government into war. But what
say,
I want...
Did you say Delano?
He did.
It's Delano. Eleanor was his wife. I know you know that. A lot of people say
common,
that, though.
It's a common slip of the tongue.
Delano. Okay, Delano.
I'll refer to him.
Although his mother did dress him in a dress and sort of raise him as a girl. That's a whole different show, though.
Yeah, and there's photographic evidence of that, and it actually wasn't all that uncommon. But yeah, so I wanted to say that by presenting evidence that FDR lied does not take away any honor from the people who tragically lost their lives, who lost their health, who lost sometimes their sanity because of fighting in a war that was caused by those lies. So we're not taking anything away from the Marines, the soldiers, the sailors, the airmen. We're not taking
the
anything
merchant
away
marine,
from
the often yeah. forgotten merchant marine. And I did a documentary about Hubert Selby Jr. Called Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow. He's the author of Last Exit to Brooklyn and Requiem for a Dream and some other really deep books that changed the world and were the topics of several free speech court proceedings that strengthened free speech in America and England. And he was a merchant marine in World War II, and he had to fight tooth and nail to get any kind of benefits, because for a long time the U.S. government said, oh, those people don't get any benefits. When in fact, they're basically the roadies for the military. They're the people that supply everything, you know. And he was, he got sick and had a couple, like one and a quarter of his lungs removed back in the day before they had good antibiotics for things and for tuberculosis. And he, you know, he was on his own. He was like at the welfare hospital because he couldn't work and he couldn't, didn't get any health care from the government. So
no VA benefits.
Yeah. So I would put the merchant marine definitely in that list.
Even to a large extent, the folks back home, so to speak, that worked in the factories and really sacrificed, you know, they went through food shortages. They went through rationing. They went through a lot of stuff in the 1940s to support this war.
Yeah.
And so much of it was originally based on lies. Now, some people have tried to justify these lies and say, well, if FDR had not lied to get America into this war, then American people wouldn't do this, wouldn't have happened, that would have happened. All that speculation. And like, you know, our friend Bill Buppert regularly points out that World War II was actually the war to save Joseph Stalin. It wasn't so much, you know, let's get Hitler, he's a bad guy, because most of the bad stuff that Hitler did, the United States people didn't know about it at the time.
Yeah, and like, you know, that was England's excuse too, but England had more of a right to do it because they were being, you know, bombed without any kind of like the U.S. let it happen on their own soil years earlier. But You know, England cut some deals with Hitler, you know, the whole Chamberlain appeasement thing. I mean, they were like, yes, Hitler, what can we do for you, Hitler?
Yeah.
And just so you, we get this across first, we're going to have this on the website also, but if you want to know where we're getting this information, one of the best resources is a book called A Century of War, Lincoln, Wilson, and Roosevelt by John Denson. And this book is important enough to me that it's one of the few books in my library, and I have an extensive library. This book is one of the few books in my library that I actually take with me on the road. It's in our RV. It's in the bookshelf right behind my bed, right behind my head right now. I also have an electronic copy of it on the computer that I'm using at this moment, and I have a backup computer, a backup copy of it on my backup hard drive because I really like this book. It's easy to reference to. And it's really, and you know, it's cheap to buy it, but it's also free to download as an electronic form on the internet. So, Century Warfare, Lincoln, Wilson, and Roosevelt by John Denson. Take a look at The Causes of the World War by Harry Elmer Barnes. Excellent book. I read back in the 70s. Really foundational stuff. Another one is The Pearl Harbor Myth, Rethinking the Unthinkable by George Victor. And Pearl Harbor, The Story of the Secret War by George Morgenstern. And now that I'm thinking about that, might have been the one I read in the 70s. I'm not for certain which is which because I'm confusing them in my mind.
I'm going to link all five or six of these books on the Freedom Fiends website, freedomfiends.com. That's Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
So we're not just pulling this stuff out of nowhere. This is well-documented. It's well-established. And so the next question might be, so why does this matter?
So 1941 hang on a sec, though. Before you do that, because we're about to go to a break, give me your thesis. What are you saying is different than what most people think?
The main point is that Japan was almost given no choice. They looked at it as a defensive move because they thought the United States government was about to attack them, and they knew that the United States government could not be defeated on a one-to-one battle. And so their only hope, and they discussed this extensively, was that they strike first and take out the Pacific Fleet, and that would at least give them a fighting ability to negotiate a peace. And that was their whole purpose in it.
All right. We're going to go to the free market here. You can chew on those baffling and powerful words. They're only baffling because they contradict everything you're told. And we're not saying it's a good thing at all that the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, but we're going to tell you more.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com.
Freedom Fiends. So, we went to the break with Ben Stone saying some stuff that was pretty bizarre. And why don't you recap it and then expand on it there, Ben, and drop some mad science.
Sure. So it's like, you know, in one of our little commercials, it says so much truth it hurts. And sometimes truth does hurt. Sometimes abandoning what you've been taught and abandoning what you're comfortable in believing, sometimes that's painful. But if you're dedicated to the truth, I think in the long run, I believe in the long run, it pays off. And so when you look at this situation, FDR made a speech right after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And he said, a very famous speech, December 7th, 1941, a day that will live in infamy. And then he goes on with this speech. And it's less than 500 words long. But in that short little 500-word speech, it contains at least 10 distortions or outright lies. And it's not hard at all. Again, this is not crazy conspiracy theory. We're not talking about who was on the grassy knoll or what the planes were doing on 9/11 or if there's aliens and under the ocean or whatever. This is stuff that's well documented, including going all the way back to 1947, 48, when investigators even then were exposing these lies. And so why is it important to have the truth? if you can accomplish what you want to do with your life, so let's just pretend for the sake of argument that FDR really believed that it was so important that if he didn't get the United States involved in the war in Europe, then, you know, Hitler was going to take over the world and all these terrible things were going to happen. Let's just assume that that whole story is the way it really was. Is it worth deceiving an entire nation? Is it worth lying to people and going to your grave carrying with you the fact that you know you lied to people in order to get your country into a war? Is it really that important? Is your desire to deceive people so strong and your ability to lead people so weak that your only method of accomplishing this task of getting the country to go over there and defend England and fight the Nazis, if your only way of doing it, if you don't have the fortitude to be the leader that it takes to stand up and say, this is the right thing, we have to do it, and all you can do is lie, what does that really say about FDR? Is that really what we want to believe about the man? And actually, that is a reference to a statement that was made by, let's see, this was Claire Booth Lucy, who was also the wife of media mogul Henry Lucy. And she actually said, and this is a direct quote, that Roosevelt lied us into war because he did not have the political courage to lead us into it. And that's quoted by, let's see, where's his name? I'm looking. Oh, here it is. Thomas Bailey, professor at Stanford University. And he was actually a Roosevelt apologist. He was for Roosevelt. And he wrote that in his book in 1948. The book is called The Man in the Street. And I don't actually recommend it. It was just a pure propaganda piece for Roosevelt. But even in that, he was admitting, and he was quoting somebody who was well-connected and knew about this, a congresswoman, Claire Booth Lucy, that actually that was the case. Roosevelt lacked the fortitude and the leadership ability to take the country into war voluntarily, so he had to deceive them and lie to them and set up a scenario where they had no choice, or at least they felt they had no choice. And this is a pretty big statement. You know, when this is a really important thing to remember. When somebody brings really spectacular news to you or something that's really hard to believe, the evidence that they have to bring to you should be substantial. So in other words, if I'm just walking around and I'm talking to you and I say, you know, it gets dark at night. Well, that doesn't take a whole lot of proof. I mean, you can figure that out, you know, pretty easily. But if I tell you that, you know, some strange thing happens when it gets dark and the moon turns to banana soup or something like this, well, that's a pretty crazy thing to say. And so you're going to want some real solid facts. And so that's why we're linking to those books up there. Between the books that we're linking to on the web page that I've already read the names of, between those and other material on this, this is a very highly documented event that took place. And as we get on into this, I don't really have the time in this segment, but when we get into the next segment, I'm going to both explain some of the lies that were told to lead the United States government into this war. And then I'm going to present you with some questions to make you think about those lies and think about, is this really the way it was? What was it we were told? And also, Why would the government need to lie to people on not just this thing with December 7th, 1941, but why do they fall to a lie so often? Why is that their default setting?
Because government. All right, we'll be back.
Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean.
This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. And we got Mr. Ben Stone here, and we are, as Gretchen said, looking forward to what he has to say. I'm just astonished. I'm just going to let Ben talk. So, Ben, drop some more mad scientists about the truth about FDR and Pearl Harbor Day, please.
So I want to give one more time, well, I'll probably give it several times, but another disclaimer that there's a difference between supporting the troops and supporting a war that only serves to create more wars and fill the pockets of the rich. And that's really what happens. You know, it's been said that when war starts, the first casualty of war is the truth. And this really is the case. War always starts with lies. War is paid for by the working class and is usually fought almost exclusively by the poor. And along with destroying more wealth than it creates, war always transfers wealth away from the working class and into the pockets of the rulers and the wealthy elite. That's the purpose of war. It's not just, you know, they lie about every single war. I did a series of podcasts a couple of years ago where I literally went through from each and every war and major military action that the United States was involved in, all the way back from the Revolutionary War forward. Well, I didn't actually get, I think I got all the way to World War II. I didn't go beyond that. And every one of them was based on a series of lies. You know, most people, I won't go into it real deep in this show because we just don't have 46 hours today to do this. But most people don't realize that the War of 1812 was A, started by the U.S., B, had nothing or very little to do with the idea that they tell you in school that it was about sailors being pressed into duty for the British Navy. And C, it was based around the United States attacking Canada because the United States wanted to annex Canada. And D, the United States lost, and in the treaty that stopped the war, nowhere in the treaty did it mention anything about the British Navy pressing soldiers or pressing sailors into duty. So that's how you know that had nothing to do with the war. But yet every school child in America believes, if they're told anything at all about the War of 1812, they believe that it was a great victory for America. America's never been defeated, and all this stuff that's just simply not true. And it brings us back to, why does the government then need to lie to us if there's a justified reason to have the war? And in the case of Japan in the late 30s, well, first off, most people don't realize this is not an event in history that just popped out of nowhere. It wasn't like everybody, there's this Forrest Gump. I talk about a lot about the Forrest Gump mentality in America, where Forrest Gump was telling the stories, and in his mind, people are just walking along, and all of a sudden, one day, the jungle jumped up and bit him in the rear end. Or, you know, gentleman was just riding in his car one day, and all of a sudden, some fella shot him in the head. And that's Forrest Gump's view of history. And that's kind of the average way that the American school system teaches children to think. You know, I spent 11 and a half years in the prison system that we call public schools. That's starting with kindergarten, and I graduated early, and there was some oddities in there, but 11 and a half years in school. And by the time I finished that term of scholastic incarceration, I learned that there were three versions of history. There's the version in the textbooks, which is boring and cartoonish, and at times it's pure fantasy. The textbook version of history is difficult to learn, it's unrealistic, and it's not told in a natural story form. It involves memorizing random dates and weird names of people and places that don't make any sense to you. And then you have to try to form a timeline in your mind to try to keep this all this random information sorted out as you're trying to understand how history works. Now, I'm not saying that this is the case, but it's almost like if the system is designed to confuse kids and make them hate the subject of history. Because as, you know, Michael, you've had on the podcast recently, the statement has been made that those who don't learn history, those who don't remember history, are doomed to repeat it. Bill Buport says it a little different. He says, history doesn't actually repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. And that's really the case. If you learn how the government lies about these things, then when the government comes along to tell you another lie to justify yet another war that's going to cost the working class people out of their wealth, and it's going to cost the poor class people the lives of their children, the next time the government brings a lie like that, if your eyes are open and you understand history, then you can spot it coming and you can see their lies as they take place. It's a lot easier to confuse people, and it's a lot easier to sell them on a war that their children are going to have to go die in, when you can actually look and see the lies as they take place. And that's a skill that it's taken me years to figure out and years to really master, of seeing the lies and understanding the lies in real time as the news people say them to you. I promise some of the myths of World War II, of December 7th, 1941. So let me throw out some of the most common myths. One is that Americans were naive, and that isolationism in the 1930s lured America into becoming vulnerable and weak, and that led to the attack in Pearl Harbor. Another myth, and I'll deal with these a little further later on, but another myth is that the American government did nothing to provoke the Japanese, and that's entirely false. And we can go back to the different books that I mentioned earlier as proof that that wasn't the case. Another myth is that the American government was totally unprepared for the attack at Pearl Harbor. I have some questions on that topic in just a second. Another myth was that the American government had no idea that Japan was about to attack, and that's blatantly false. Mm-hmm. They knew almost to the day when the attack was coming, even to the point of removing the bulk of the Pacific Fleet out of Pearl Harbor right before it happened. And that's part of the rest of this myth, is that the Pacific Fleet was decimated by this horrible surprise attack, when the reality is, no, all of the carriers and all of the carrier support vehicles were out at sea. The only thing left in Pearl Harbor when the attack took place was old relics from before the First World War. Some of the ships were 30 and 40 years old at the time. One of the ships was one of the first ships that they had switched over from coal power to oil to use in their boilers for their steamers. So that's the kind of relics that were sitting in Pearl Harbor at the time. Now, here's a question to ponder back about the isolationist thing. If America's policy was isolationist, why did Roosevelt sign the Lend-Lease Act just prior to the attack at Pearl Harbor?
Explain the Lend-Lease Act.
And this is really important, too. The Lend-Lease Act did a variety of things. Essentially, what it did was it gave free stuff. Eventually, they'd pay it back. But at the time, it was free. Gave free stuff to the British government so that they could mount war against Germany. It also did the same thing with Russia. It was the United States government started forcing factories into making.
It's why you can actually get a Mosin-Nagant rifle made by Westinghouse in America.
Yeah, think about that for a second. That's just mind-boggling. The companies in the United States were forced by FDR before the United States was in World War II, before December 7th, companies were forced to produce arms that were then sent to Russia and were sent to Great Britain essentially for free so that they could fight in this war. In addition to that, the United States government paid for and supplied airmen and Marines to go to Burma, including all the support vehicles and all the airplanes and everything, to set up the Flying Tigers to literally fight the Japanese in China. And that was happening before December 7th, 1941.
And that's part of what led to Burma or Myanmar being the second most messed up, tyrannical, isolated country in the world.
Yeah. And now going back to my questions, if America was isolationist, why did Roosevelt release active duty pilots, technicians, and instructors, along with a mini air force to support the Flying Tigers? So I mentioned that one. If America was isolationist, why did Roosevelt break off all oil and fuel sales to Japan prior to the attack at Pearl Harbor, then refuse to meet with the Japanese delegates to discuss why he had cut them off?
Yeah.
This is a great insult to somebody. If you're from the Japanese delegate and you're in Washington, D.C., and he played these games with them, he would let the Japanese delegates know that, hey, I'm going to meet with you on Tuesday or whatever. And so Tuesday at 10 o'clock, you know, they've got it in their schedule, so they show up. And they sit there for 2 or 3 hours. And then finally, some secretary, not like the Secretary of State, but an actual secretary, comes out and just shoos him off, tells him, well, he can't meet with you today. It's not on his priority list. Come back tomorrow. And he did that over and over with the Japanese delegates, clearly insulting them.
That's typical. I mean, that's like schoolyard bully stuff on a global, on a global stage. I mean, like, it's kind of the equivalent of, the moral equivalent, but times a billion of, the kid who like knocks your lunch money out of your hand and knocks your lunch out of your hand when the teacher's coming around the corner, but not there yet. And then sees, then the person whose lunch you knocked on the floor shoves you and then cries to the teacher, "He hit me."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or pretends like he's trying to help you. Like, oh, what happened? Did you fall?
And then kicks you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then kills you and many of your citizens. Yeah.
That's the petty way that Roosevelt was treating the Japanese delegates. And consider this also, that Japan is a very old country. Japan was a country, long before anybody even knew that there was a North America, or at least anybody in Europe knew that. And in addition to that, if you go back in history a little bit further, the other Roosevelt, the Teddy Roosevelt, had been instrumental in negotiating a peace between Japan and Russia. And then the United States reneged on the deal in the 1920s, and Japan ended up losing a big bunch of territory that they had been given by the first Roosevelt. So they already had a bad taste in their mouth of dealing with American presidents named Roosevelt, because they'd already dealt with one that ended up lying to them. So this is what they were looking at, Another thing to keep in mind about this is, if the American government knew nothing about the upcoming surprise attack, and if the American fleet was decimated by that surprise attack, why, I mentioned this a second ago, why wasn't there a single modern ship at Pearl Harbor at the time of the attack? Every modern carrier, battleship, cruiser, support ship, submarine, everything had been sent out on maneuvers on the high seas just days before the attack. Every single ship damaged at Pearl Harbor was a relic. So why would they do that if they didn't already know?
Yeah. All right, we're going to go sell some stuff. We'll be right back. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Hey, it is the Freedom Fiends. This is the Black Swamp Squirrel. And we are listening to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, dropping mad science about the truth about Pearl Harbor on this great day of infamy. And our minds are getting blown and we're realizing, oh, we didn't learn anything in school.
I learned how to use a pencil sharpener.
I learned how to read a ruler.
I learned how to take tests and get through classes without actually absorbing anything.
I learned how to be funny so I wouldn't get beat up. All right, go ahead, man.
Yeah, so I need to give this disclaimer again, because I think it's really important that there's a difference between saying I support the troops and I support a war that only serves to create more wars and to fill the pockets of those who are already wealthy, and do so at the cost of American lives. And, it's the same for anywhere. During the break, we were talking, the Japanese government was not the good guys in this. The Japanese government was a horrible thing, and so was the American government. And the lesson to be learned in this is not that there were, you know, black and white good guys and bad guys. The Nazis were bad. The Russians were good. The Nazis were bad. The Americans were good. The Italians were bad. The Americans were good. That's not the lesson. The lesson is wars are started by lies, and they're continued by lies. They cost the lives of innocent people in proportion to how many actually, if you say, well, but those guys are in the military, they're taking that risk. If you look at the actual numbers, far more civilians were killed in World War II than people who chose to be in the military. And here's another thought, and just keep this in mind in the back of your head as you hear all these things. You know, I'm not going to go through and try to debunk or support the idea that one generation is better than the other. And I know that that was a way that some people in the media actually kind of kissed up to a generation in order to get them as viewers on their TV shows. And I'm not going to support that or debunk it, but I will say this, that if World War II, if the people of America really believed that it was such a justified war, and if they really believed at the time that it was so necessary, why did they require to be drafted? Why was a draft necessary if they really believed it was such a needed war, especially in those first few years? Why was the draft? Because it wasn't really clear who was going to win in December 7th, 1941, or even a year later, it wasn't really that clear who was going to win. So why would they have to be drafted if it was so clear that it was winnable and then it was justified? And the truth of the matter is, you know, my mom is from that generation. She's passed away now, so is my dad. And my mom put the seeds of doubt into my mind the earliest on this topic. And she was an FDR supporter back in the day. But as the years went by and as she learned more and more about this, by the time I was a teenager up in high school, she's actually the one who pointed me towards I can't remember which one it was, if it was the book by Harry Elmer Barnes or if the one by George Morgenstern. But whichever one it was, that was the one that she pointed me to while I was in high school in the 1970s to say, you know, there's another side to this, and it makes a whole lot more sense than the side that the school says in their little textbook there that you're reading. And so having a mother that was skeptical about the government story, I think, was one of the most foundational things for me in being able to learn that very often, if not every single time, the government story is going to be a lie. They're going to default to a lie first, and then they're going to try to cover themselves. And this is not on the subject of December 7th, 1941. This is more of a current events in, you know, Southern Alabama that nobody outside of Southern Alabama is hearing about. But there was a local politician here who suddenly resigned his position. And so they asked the mayor of that town, why did that guy, why did he quit? Where is he at? How come he's not in his office? And the mayor immediately lied and said, he's on vacation. He's just taking some time off. He's on vacation. Well, the fact of the matter was, the mayor had hired the guy under false pretenses, told him he was hiring him as the police chief. Then later, you know, once he got there, moved his whole family there, he found out, well, actually, he hired somebody else's police chief. You're going to have this other title, but you're going to be important, and we're going to give you a salary. And so the guy stuck with it for a couple months, and then he quit and moved and just left. And instead of the mayor just coming right out and saying that, his knee-jerk reaction was to lie. And then the local news media found out about it anyway. But the fact is, the mayor's response is always to lie first.
Because he's governor. Every politician, every mayor, yeah. Every governor.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squigelts from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Intergalactic Prairie Studios in the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite Libair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. My name is... Well, my name's not really important. Our message is important. Yeah, this is Michael Dean. I'm talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and Gretchen. Gretchen, introduce yourself, please.
Hello, this is Gretchen. I'm the Black Swamp Squirrel.
Yeah. Yep. And what do you think about what Ben said so far about the truth about FDR? And I'm not talking about the Canadian so-called philosophy podcast. I'm talking about the other one that's filled with half-truths. And stretches of the imagination and, you know, open to interpretation. And that's my opinion. I don't know if that's a fact, but Ben says it's a fact about the FDR thing and I believe him. So, what do you think about that, Gretchen?
I think it's good. I think people need to know. So there's maybe less blind, flag waving and maybe less people will die or have their lives ruined or have their genetics ruined for generations or whatever else, man. Wars are started by people that are too old to fight and die.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Or too cowardly.
Yeah, yeah, that's the truth. They always had, they start the wars, but then we're, I hate to sound collectivist, but we're the ones that fight them. They start them and we fight them and we lose our children. And that's the really tragic part of it. And you know, as the years go by, something happens with the mind where you think back and after years and years of having one story told over and over and over by the media and by the government, and it has a tendency to cause a person's mind to start believing the lies as if they were truth, even if they didn't believe the truth, even if they didn't believe the lies back in the day. With enough propaganda, a person will begin to believe the lies, even if they knew better at some time. That's what's really sad about something like this. You know, I was talking.
That's where you come in to say no.
I was talking before the break about, I mentioned that I learned in school that, and I didn't learn this from the teachers, by the way, but I learned in school that there are three versions of history, and it speaks to what I was just saying. There's the textbook version, which is really confusing. It's put to you in a format that it's almost impossible to relate it to anything. So it doesn't really make any sense. It's very difficult to remember names and places and dates and all these things that don't really apply to your life. And then there's another version of history. And this is what a person's mind does with all this useless information. So you're given all this information and you have to take tests on it in school and you have to recite some of it backwards to the teacher and you have to produce a certain amount of a grade to get by to the next level and everything. And so what you end up doing is sort of forming in your mind an unrealistic history that's kind of based on the textbooks, but at the same time, you're trying to make a sense of this weird, disjointed story that's been given to you. And so people tend to come up with dramatically wrong ideas about history as a result of all this confusion. And so you get things in your head like, which one was Daniel Boone and who was Davy Crockett and what's the difference between these guys? And you get to thinking, so Jesse James was from the Old West? Or maybe John Dillinger had something to do with the Chicago Prohibition and the gangsters like Al Capone. And all that's false. But these things are real common mistakes.
It's funny that they make you rotely memorize the names of these people in this little thumbnail bio that's completely false or, you know, largely false. And, you know, even starting with George Washington and the cherry tree or Abe Lincoln and the I cannot tell a lie. You know, it's all hogwash.
They were great men. That's all you need to know.
Great men. Yeah, people love their great men. It's silly.
And so that's two types of history, but there's a third type of history that's really a lot more difficult to get your mind around unless you clear away all of those lies first. And that's the true history, the true fascinating stories of how this stuff really took place. And when you learn it in story form, this is kind of one of the advantages to Hollywood, because they can present the false story in a story form and get you to remember it really easy. And that's why we think things like, oh, Jesse James was in the Old West. No, he was never in the West. Missouri was as far west as he went. But we don't think of that. We think of Jesse James like in 1890, robbing a railroad in California or some crazy thing like that. He was dead for years by that time. But we don't think of that because the movies and TV, all of the whole Hollywood production, is so skilled at laying out a story, and we give them a pass. We can say, oh, well, they can make anything out of history, and it's perfectly okay. So we have this guy, like in the 60s, when I was a kid, there was a show called Daniel Boone, and it was entirely fabricated, and it was all black and white, good guys and bad guys. The Shawnee were always the bad Indians. The Cherokee were always the good Indians. Daniel Boone was always fighting for the, you know, for the rights of the little people, and he was fighting for the revolution and all the, and none of this stuff was true. I mean, the Indian tribes were human beings. So there was good people and there was bad people, and it had nothing to do with whether you were a Shawnee or a Cherokee. It had to do with whether you were a good person or a bad person. And history is not made up of these cartoonish characters like this and these storyboard lines. The real story of history is fascinating and wonderful. And so when you find something like this, the books I was mentioning earlier with John Dennison and the others, when you find somebody who can tell the story of history, make it fascinating and make it factual, man, it's just a thing you want to just grab a hold of. Or at least I do, because I'm fascinated with history. So I had some questions there. You know, if America was isolationist, why did Roosevelt choose to garrison and fortify both Wake Island and Midway Island, which had never been military bases, just months before the attack at Pearl Harbor? Now, here's some homework for the listeners. I want you to open a computer or get a map and look on Google Earth or whatever you use, a globe will work, and find Hawaii in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And then go north and find Midway Island, kind of at a triangle. If you're going to draw a triangle between Hawaii and Japan, Midway Island would like be a leg of that triangle. And then if you're going to make that triangle into a box, into a square, then you're going to find another island that's down south more in the Pacific, and it's called Wake Island. And between Midway and Wake Island, those are both about halfway points from Hawaii to Japan. And now consider this. If you just consider yourself as a Japanese military strategist, and months before Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt took the airstrips that had belonged to a private private transportation company. I think it was, I've got it somewhere in my notes, but it was Pan American Airways. There was airports on both Midway Atoll and Wake Island that belonged to Pan American Airways, and they had these ships airplanes that would fly part of the way, and they would stop on those islands and refuel and then go on to the Orient. And so Roosevelt just took those properties, took those airways, and converted them into military bases in 1940 and 1941 in preparation for what he knew was going to be war. So here you're sitting in Japan, and for no particular reason whatsoever, Roosevelt moves the entire Pacific Fleet out of the really well-protected harbor in San Diego, California, moves them right to your back door in Hawaii into a bottlenecked Pearl Harbor was a real shallow and bottlenecked. So all it takes is one ship sunk in the mouth of the Pearl Harbor, and everything else that's inside of Pearl Harbor is stuck in there until you get that ship out of the way. So strategically, it was a horrible spot to have your whole fleet. So Roosevelt moves the entire fleet out of the safe waters of San Diego, puts it into this bottlenecked harbor in Hawaii. Then he builds up a garrison on the two closest islands to take you from Hawaii to Japan, and he's already got the army stationed in the Philippines. Now, if you look on a map and you see where Hawaii is, where Wake Island is, where Midway Island is, and where the Philippines are, and then you realize that Roosevelt had put a detachment of flyers in Burma, he literally had Japan surrounded before December 7th, 1941. In every way, it looked like he was getting ready to go into war with Japan. And Japan, the leadership in Japan discussed this extensively, and they talked about how there was no possible way they could stand up to the might of the American industry and the population. Keep in mind, Japan's about the size of California. So there's no, and they don't have the kind of resources. They don't have the kind of iron and the kind of oil and the kind of rubber that the United States had available to it at the time. So they knew there was no way they could stand up to this giant. They knew there was no way they could go into open war with the United States and survive unless they could do one thing. If they could punch hard enough with the first blow to be able to knock out the Pacific Fleet, then that would set the Americans back long enough that Japan could negotiate a truce with them. And that's what they wanted desperately. And that's why they attacked Japan. They didn't just pop out of the ground. You know, there was a lot of stereotyping in the late 30s of Japanese people. And this was necessary in order to justify this war. So they showed them as evil. They showed them with the bottle, with the Coke bottle glasses and squinty and big buck teeth. And they stereotyped them and made them as evil looking as possible so they could demonize them to the American people and justify this whole situation.
And, you know, Disney made some cartoons like that too.
Oh yeah. Some horrific stuff. It's still floating around out there. If you search,
yeah,
for
search,
it.
Go on YouTube and search Disney racist cartoons or Disney Japanese.
So, you know, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a government that needed desperately to get into a war, didn't have the leadership to carry the country into war. And so they lied, they deceived the American public, and they baited an opponent to hit them first. And I have to say, and I can't go into it completely right now, but Roosevelt was not the first American president that baited someone into hitting America first so that the United States government could justify going into war. It was actually an old trick that had been used over and over.
And the police and the federal government and all of the three-letter agencies that have police powers still do that all the time, especially with saying they're keeping us safe from terrorists. They basically, like, you know, as someone, I think it was Will Coley said, they find the dumbest kid in the mosque, get him all angered up, someone that wouldn't do anything anyway without their help, and give him a box of sugar and say it's dynamite and tell him to plant it under a bridge and then arrest him. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends. You know, we talk a lot on here about the non-aggression principle, which is what we base. It's what libertarianism is about. It's do not initiate aggression. It does not mean you cannot use violence in self-defense. We carry guns. We're prepared to use them, but we never initiate aggression. And, you know, the term non-aggression is not unique to libertarians, and it's been used for similar and different purposes by governments throughout the ages. We were chatting during the break about some various treaties and pacts that the U.S. signed and broke or didn't sign or refused to sign or signed with Native Americans. And what is it? This is fascinating. That building is made entirely out of paper mache made from broken treaties. Yeah. This is interesting. And we're not bashing the U.S. We're bashing the idea of all governments and talking about how they lie all the time. Lie going forward and lie going backward with the telling of history. And here's an interesting one. During negotiations between the United States and North Korea in 2003, I didn't know there ever were negotiations, but North Korea offered to eventually eliminate its nuclear weapons program if both sides signed a non-aggression treaty along with multiple other conditions, and the U.S. Wouldn't do it. So, you know, they're like, no, we want to boycott you and scare you and threaten you into getting rid of your nuclear weapons program, but we're not willing to promise to just never aggress on you to get you to do it. So, yeah, man.
They always want it one way, but whoever's the country that's in the more powerful position.
The bigger bully, yeah.
Yeah. They always want everything in their direction all the time, and they are never willing to make any kind of compromise. And I think there's a certain amount of bravado. If you get around some people in American society, and you say that to them, their chest swells up and they say, yeah, that's American.
Yeah.
But it's really not. That's what you've taught to believe was American. That's really not a good way to behave.
Yeah. And everybody in every country throughout history is taught that their country is the greatest. And again, we want to say that we're not taking anything away from anybody who has, any valor or pride connected with Pearl Harbor or any relatives who do. Have your celebration. Have your picnic. Hug each other. Love your families. But we're going to drop some truth here. So continue, please, Ben, on the truth about FDR and Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, so the most important thing about war is trying to survive. You know, whether you're forced to go and fight or whether you are able to avoid it or whether the war is taking place in your country and you're trying to, you know, stay out of the range of the bombs. The most important thing when it's happening is just trying to survive it. And the human mind will go through a lot of stuff to try to justify really horrific events. And when you believe things like you believe my country right or wrong, and you never, ever, ever question whether or not the leaders, so-called leaders in Washington, D.C. are making the right choice or not, if you never question those things and you always just assume that the storyline is exactly the way it's being fed to you, then you're forced later, when you start to see the evidence of real truth and of real events, you're forced to have to either change reality in your mind and believe what you know to be a lie, and then try to convince yourself of it in some kind of Stockholm syndrome, trying to convince yourself in your mind that no, these captors are great. They like me. They're here to serve me, and they're wonderful. They're doing good things for me. And that's really what it is. It's a kind of a Stockholm syndrome where the government.
More and more people are really getting into a disconnect of what's that term for believing one thing despite absolute evidence to the contrary?
Oh, wow. I just made a meme on that a few months ago.
cognitive dissonance. And there's a lot of that going around because there's a lot of people who are, you know, good Americans, want small government, want to be left alone, want to keep their money, want to choose their own healthcare, want to keep their guns, you know, people like us. But they're also like, support the troops, support the, you know, when you say support the troops, and there's this kind of disconnect too of, well, I don't always agree with what Obama's doing with the military, but I still got to support the troops. It's kind of all the same thing. And I'm not saying you have to damn your family members to hell who are members of the military. I have family members who are in the Army. I love them dearly. I can't support what any government does, especially when, you know, a lot of people too say like, yo, you got to support your local police. They're your friends. And it's like, police more and more are just shooting people's dogs and shooting people. You know, I see these headlines every day of like, you know, unruly kid in school, police are called, show up and shoot him. Or even like, you know, guy having an asthma attack, his son calls the paramedics, they show up and they shoot the guy having an asthma attack. It's happened more and more and more. They will take your property if they want it. They'll kick you out on the street. They'll try to arrest you for drunk driving when you didn't drink. They do all sorts of stuff, man. They're not your friends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience drop in blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. I am Michael Dean, and Ben Stone is gonna wrap it all up, and then we're gonna have the redemption in the third act. So go, Ben, go, Ben, go, Ben, go. What's wrong with what we're told about FDR and Pearl Harbor Day?
Well, again, I want to emphasize the point that I made in the first hour that, you know, if Franklin Roosevelt had been the kind of leader, let's just assume that the cause of World War II was really justified, that the United States really did need to get in there and fight the Nazis, and let's just assume all that's the case, then why wasn't Franklin Roosevelt the kind of leader that could stand up to the American people in 1940 during the election and say to them, I realize America doesn't want to go to war. War is a horrible thing, but this is a task before us that we have to stand up to, and we have to do this. Why didn't Franklin Roosevelt have the guts and the fortitude to stand up and say that to the American people in the 1940 election? And the reason he didn't, because the people of the United States of America would not have reelected him in 1940. He had to say, I'm going to keep you out of war. That's exactly what Wilson had done back in 1916, I believe it was, when he was running for reelection. And the reelection campaign, I think it was 1918. Anyway, his reelection campaign was for Wilson, he kept us out of the war. And then as soon as he got his reelection campaign done, what does he do? He charges headlong into a war that was absolutely none of America's business. And again, I got to encourage the listener, if you're thinking, what? World War I wasn't our business? We had to go fight the Kaiser who was trying to take over the world. No, that's all a lie. Get the book, A Century of Warfare, Lincoln, Wilson, and Roosevelt by John Denson. It's a small book. You can get it for free if you look hard enough on the internet. If you have to just buy a hard copy, we've got a link to Amazon that's at the Freedom Fiends website. It's a really good book. It's easy to read. John Denson is maybe one of the best authors on this topic out there. And that book really explains this well. And it has all the documentation so that you can search this thing out and find out that in fact, not only, and none of this is new. I'm not saying anything that's new information. This has all been well known for decades. And John Denson puts it together really well. The reason that they lie to you is so that they can manipulate you. Because war always destroys wealth, but war always also takes wealth out of the pockets of the working class and funnels it into the pockets of the bankers and the politicians and the giant industrialists that own the armament companies. That's why war takes place. War has always been to enrich the elite, and it's always been at the cost of the least of the people who can afford it the least, of the poor and of the working class
and,
people.
Yeah, and it's very rare for the son or daughter of a rich person to go to war. You know, it's very rare for them to volunteer, and it's very rare if they're drafted for them to not be able to get out of it.
World War II was a really good example
of this. I ain't no fortunate son.
World War II was a very good example of that because they put a lot of effort into showing the Hollywood types. You know, they would have, I can't think of any of the names right now, but say they would have these big Hollywood stars.
Well, in Vietnam, they had Elvis. He didn't see any combat. He was singing songs there.
Exactly. He was in Germany where there was no war going on at the time. But they would have all these famous Hollywood actors, some of which were too old to even be in the military, but they would still put a uniform on them and have them ride in the airplane, or they would have the photograph opportunity where, you know, they're out there with the crew and they're doing all these things. And sometimes a few of these people actually did go in and had some pretty heroic stuff that they did. But where was, you know, where were the ultra rich during this time? Where was the really wealthy of society? Were they out there putting their life on the line? Well, you know, it can be argued.
No, they were making airplanes.
Yeah, to a large extent, they were doing that, or they were you know, staying in the universities, or you know, living where it was safe. There's a few exceptions, like John F. Kennedy is a notable exception. On the other hand, it's been argued that, you know, I won't go into that in depth, but there's some what might be considered conspiracy theories on that situation, that there was a lot of effort to try to keep him in a safe zone, and he sort of just wasn't the kind of guy that you could keep in a safe zone and end up stumbling into a mess anyway. But, you know, above and beyond, and there's another example of the elder George Bush being shot down. And again, there's a bunch of real weird questions about how that actually took place and why the story changed so dramatically between the times when he told it when he was young and the times that his biographers told it when he was older. But even, you know, even if you get away from all that, it's just the sheer numbers of people that are dying and of wealth that's vanishing and the suffering that the people back home have to go through, not knowing if your son is going to come back from war, not knowing if your husband's going to come back from war, and being absolutely broke and having to have members of the family working in factories that wouldn't normally be able to do that, that would normally be able to stay home and raise the children. And a whole generation of Americans taught that, you know, that all the members of the family now, for the first time in American history, have to go out and get a job to support the family, and you have to put all the children into some kind of daycare.
Which is really just you paying for the war.
Yeah, exactly. It's the wealth being sucked out of the pockets of the working people to be funneled into the pockets of the giant corporations that own the banks and that own the factories that make the munitions and own the transportation companies that haul all this stuff around the world to kill each other with. And that's really what it's about. It's about taking the wealth out of the hands of the workers. And then this kind of sounds a little communist, but the communists actually, you know, used half-truths to support what they were talking about. And this actually is true. They take the wealth out of the pockets of the working class, and they funnel it into the pockets of these ultra-rich bankers and ultra-rich industrialists and giant investors that make more money than we can even imagine. We can't even imagine the money existing that they make off these wars.
There are people that make Bill Gates look like a pauper. They're not listed in the richest
Fortune 500
in the world. Yeah, they're and it's kind of hard. I mean, like, nobody, there was a really interesting thing the other day on, what was it, on the newsroom. And this put it really well. It was like they were talking about this person that was going to buy their network. And they were like, does she have $4 billion? And the money honey on the show, you know, the lady that does the economics part, does segment, said, well, nobody really has $4 billion. But yeah, she can buy it. Which, you know, basically what that means is nobody has a savings account with $4 billion in it. That's not how it works. But there are people with the ability to access and use and destroy amounts of money that are far more than what Bill Gates is reported to have. Barack Obama comes to mind, but and George Soros comes to mind, who is listed in that list of richest men in the world. But no, the things that those people can do to amass and move and destroy money is way beyond, you know, counting it in billions. It's probably in the trillions. And a lot of them, you don't know their names.
Yeah, and once again, we're not saying that Japan was a good country or Nazi Germany was a good country and that America was the bad guys. We're not saying anything like that. We're pointing out that governments lie and governments drag their people into war.
I would even say, you know, when our libertarian friends go out with a bullhorn and a video camera and yell at the Marine guarding the Federal Reserve building, that's not even the real building, man.
Yeah,
that's for
exactly.
Show. Yeah.
Yeah. And the same with Fort Knox, if you could get to it to complain about it. But,
yeah.
You know, and on that same, just something to think about from this is that when the American troops finally went into Germany and defeated the German armies and they found rooms.
And did some rapes while they were there. There was a lot of that
going
on.
Yeah. But they found whole rooms full of jewelry and full of the gold teeth that were taken out of the Jewish prisoners. And there were literally boxes of gold teeth that had been taken out of the Holocaust victims. And this is the kind of thing governments do. And it's not just the Nazis. You know, Stalin was doing that kind of stuff before Hitler ever had the kind of power to even think about doing something like that. Stalin was already killing millions of people. So there was not a good side in any of this. There was nothing but lies and deception to crush the will of people and to keep them as slaves and to keep them pushed down and to keep the wealth flowing into the pockets of those who already had the wealth. So, you know, we're not for a second trying to say that the Japanese army was good or the Japanese people were this or that or the Japanese government was good. What we're saying is war is a terrible, terrible thing. And any time a government begins to lie and try to justify reasons to go to war, we need to immediately reject that.
Another lie, too, was the kamikaze pilots. It wasn't that they were so patriotic that they were, yes, I will die for my country. A lot of them were threatened, like, we'll kill your family if you don't do this. They were also drugged and brainwashed, but...
Historian Thomas Bailey, who was, I referred to him in the first hour, he was a professor at Stanford University, and he was a Roosevelt apologist. He said in his 1948 book, and so again, this is nothing new, 1948, he wrote, and this is the book, The Man in the Street. He said, Franklin Roosevelt repeatedly deceived the American people during the period before Pearl Harbor. Now, again, this is a guy who liked Roosevelt, was an apologist for Roosevelt, and was writing a pro-Roosevelt article. And he said that what I just read, Franklin Roosevelt repeatedly deceived the American people during the period before Pearl Harbor. And then he went on to say, if he was going to induce the people to move at all, he would have to trick them into acting for what he thought to be their best interests. And now, just think about this for a second. And think about this next line I'm about to read. He said, he was like the physician who must tell the patient lies for the patient's own good. Now, if I have a doctor who's lying to me, I fire the doctor.
Yeah.
I want to know the truth. And that's, you know, if America really was in that kind of a danger, then, hey, tell them and do what you can. But, the facts just don't support it. There's so many things there. But you can see how these people think. That they would lie so that folks back in the United States would give up their sons' lives for this pet project of Roosevelt's.
It's a lot like the kamikaze thing, but gentler.
Yeah.
We'll be back. Ugh. Back with a redemption in the third act.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends. So a couple little announcements here. One is that at the end of this episode on the podcast version, I'm going to put the song by my band Bomb, Lucy in the Sky with Desi, because people keep asking me for the MP3 of it now that we opened the show with an instrumental version of it, and I've usually been meowing on it, but I finally remembered it has words, so I've been singing like, you know, a couplet of the words each time. And people want to hear it, so it's going to be at the end of the show. The other announcement is, buy Freedom Fiends buttons. Invest in Fiends bonds for your nation. No, buy Freedom Fiends buttons. We have 10 buttons for $10 postpaid anywhere in the U.S., $16 Canada. And these are great little buttons that have funny stuff on them. You can go to the Freedom Fiends site, click on the link at the top that says buttons. I also revamped the whole site this week because several people who are legally blind wrote me and told me they couldn't read the website with the new dark, low contrast. I thought it looked pretty groovy and goth, but yeah, apparently
it's much easier to read now.
Yeah.
It's better.
And you're not vision impaired, right?
No, but I make visual things for a living.
And people who are, I just thought it looked cool and gothy, and I was in mourning because our cat died, but one of our cats passed away. But so yeah, it's a very clear, easy to read layout now, and I'm going to leave it that way for a long time. But go buy Freedom Fiends buttons. They make great stocking stuffers for, you know, anybody who's 8 or older who can have a button without putting it in their mouth. I don't know. Use your own discretion of what age you want to bring it down to. But Freedom Fiends buttons are fun, and they are nifty, and they are wonderful. And I just got a whole new shipment of them, and they go out with a data DVD of Fiends episodes and a Fiends movie. And yeah, Gretchen, if you want some more for stocking stuffers, stick around afterwards and remind me. Ben. Oh, Gretchen was going to say something to Ben, and then Ben's going to finish up with the redemption in the third act.
I have great faith in your ability to give us the redemption in the third act, because the hamster in my brain is freaking out because war is terrible and it makes me really sad. It sounds like it's a game or a story or movie, but it's real people. It's real lives damaged, ruined, ended.
All right, Ben, you got 2 minutes.
It really is. And I just want to just put one other horrible, horrible thought out before I try to wrap this thing up and make it and send us somewhere back towards civilization. You know, the World War II began December 7th, 1941 with the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And that was terrible. And people died.
Well, the U.S. involvement in it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it had been going on in other places for a while prior to that. But people died, had their lives destroyed. It was just a terrible thing to take place especially to the folks that were actually there at Pearl Harbor when it happened.
2,400 people died there that day.
Yeah. Americans. Just think about that. That is just stunning. And there's a good amount of evidence that the U.S. government knew right up to the day of when that was going to take place and removed the bulk of the fleet and left those guys there as bait. I mean, oh, man. But then, to top this war, this horrible war, to top it off, the United States had created these two atomic bombs. And one, and the first one they dropped on Hiroshima. And
you have a minute for redemption in the third act, Ben.
Before the Japanese government could really respond to that, they dropped the second one on Nagasaki. And a lot of people don't notice or don't know this, but the largest Christian church in Eastern Asia was the targeting point.
Yeah.
That the bomb
and
was
the Japanese, and the Japanese offered a conditional surrender, and the U.S., back to that bully thing, wouldn't take a conditional surrender. And really, we're just itching to check out their new toy that, you know, melts people into vapor. So, Ben, redeem us.
There is an answer, and the answer is so simple. You know, as long as you call the cops every time you have a problem, government continues. As long as you expect the government to fix all your problems, government continues. As long as you decide in your mind that the only way the roads can be made and the only way that air traffic control can be ran is by the government, as long as you do that, we'll have a government, because there's a market for government. And anything that there's a desire for, someone will provide it. But there's a way to get out of this. There's a way to move beyond this. And that way is to stop depending on government to solve all your problems. Stop expecting and stop believing that government is the answer. People are the answer.
Excellent.
I desire freedom.
Yeah. I vote with my wallet for freedom. It's been a great show, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
And thank you, Mike.
Thank you for your service. Thank you, Gretchen, for your service.
Thank you for yours.
Worms. Give me a worms.
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 Worms. Worms, worms, worms. All right.
Meow.
I do feel better. That 30 seconds at the end from Ben gave me some hope, man. It's hard to have hope, but there is hope. And we try to stay positive. And we'll be back tonight with Derek J to laugh at the state. He'll be laughing at the state without me. And then I'll be back next night to laugh at the state some more. Worms. La 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 la